I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection. The world's richest man, the great oligarch of the new economy, Bill Gates, is a defiant guy today. He won't accept Federal Judge Thomas Penfield Jackson's ruling to break up Microsoft into separate and competing apps and ops companies. He rejects this whole model of the Standard Oil breakup in 1911 and the AT&T breakup of 1984. Bill Gates' defiant attitude, though, is part of the problem, Judge Jackson said. Microsoft, he wrote, as it is presently organized and led, is unwilling to accept the notion that it broke the law. The old monopoly models, from oil refineries to phone lines, may sound obsolete, but the American antitrust idea still applies in the internet age, Judge Jackson said. For lots of new companies, the ruling and the lawsuit, which has been going on for 2.5 years now, mean new life in an industry that's been dominated by Microsoft for so long. They're looking through a new window into the post-PC, post-Microsoft world. We're looking through that window with them this hour. We're talking about the Microsoft breakup. Our phone is 1-800-423-8255. The 1-800-423-TALK. Are you celebrating the Microsoft news, Connection listeners? What's it going to mean in the long run? Our guest in the studio, Jonathan Zittrain, is Harvard's philosopher king of internet law and entrepreneurship. We'll be joined by lots of others this hour. But get us started, Jonathan. Is it over? Are we going to have two baby bills, as they say, Microsoft splits?
Strikes me that the legal case is far from over. There'll be plenty of new paperwork to be filed, new judges to hear it, whether at the Court of Appeals level or perhaps directly to the Supreme Court, which Judge Jackson seems to have invited, and I don't see why the Justice Department wouldn't take him up on that. As to whether, in the bigger picture, Microsoft's dominance is over, this is definitely a point of inflection for them. Not just the case, but a whole bunch of other factors have put them to the mat again. They have nowhere to go but down, in a sense, because
they've
been so
successful.
What's
left to argue about in the law here?
In the law, there's a whole set of review now to be done of Judge Jackson's decision, the findings of fact, the conclusions of law, and, of course, his proposed remedy. His proposed remedy is something that came about very quickly. People were very surprised that he didn't have at least a few desultory hearings before coming down on the government's side or on whatever side he was going to. So that now is going to be reviewed at the appellate level for error at varying standards of review.
It seems to me once the government and the judge, and I hate to say it, but once the newspapers and the news keep pounding on this very simple, rather clean and understandable decision, it settles in, maybe to the popular imagination. I can't imagine how this thing could be turned around at this point.
It certainly had been, if not unthinkable, not thought about, the idea of breaking up Microsoft in the public parlance until pretty recently. And then probably that was a strategic decision on the part of the government while worrying about the liability phase of the case, not to get into, wow, you really want to break this thing up, huh? This is a goose laying golden eggs. Are you really
Judge
sure
Jackson
you want
to... Yeah, you get it. I want to break it up. Get it?
Right, exactly.
Ron Cass is on the line. He's the dean of the Boston University Law School, and he knows the antitrust side of this thing well. Is it over, Dean Cass?
I don't think it's nearly over yet, and I think Jonathan's right that we have a lot of time ahead of us in the appeals phase. I doubt at the end of the day that Microsoft will be broken up, because the order that Judge Jackson has entered is vulnerable on many different grounds.
Really? I mean, how does a Supreme Court justice say, no, we're not going to do this? What would the rationale be for turning it around?
Well, first, I don't think it will go directly to the Supreme Court.
It'll get there someday.
Well, it may get there someday. In the meantime, the judge has said that Microsoft violated the law by tying its browser to its operating system. That flies in the face of a decision by the Court of Appeals that will review this. The judge said that Microsoft charged too little for its products. Again, a pricing decision that's vulnerable. Many parts of the judge's underlying decision are subject to attack, and the remedy is an extraordinary remedy.
Yeah. Well, at the same time, we've heard these things. It seems to me, you're not saying it's a cavalier judgment that Microsoft broke the law, or that this kind of explosive, open, intergalactically huge marketplace doesn't need a tyrant that big. I mean, it seems to me the broad lines of it, make a kind of sense. I can't imagine it being overturned on findings of law.
Well, I actually think that...
findings of fact is what I meant.
If I were betting on this, I would bet that, in fact, it would be overturned several parts of the judge's decision for him not having used the right standard in the tying part of the case, not having used the right standard in the pricing part of the case. But if you get past that, one of the things you said in the beginning is that Bill Gates is being criticized for rejecting the analogy to Standard Oil and AT&T.
Yep.
This is a very different case. Standard Oil was found to violate the law by gobbling up other companies. And in all of the cases except AT&T where the courts have broken people up, that's been the basis for it. AT&T was a consent decree where they had something to get out of this. They could get out of regulation of one of their lines of business by agreeing to be broken up. That's not the case here. We're getting a breakup combined with very heavy regulation.
Given the findings of fact, let's assume those are not overturned, would you still argue that Microsoft is not too big for this field and should not be broken up?
Well, I think the breakup only makes sense if you have the view of the case that the judge and the Justice Department have, that is that this is a giant company that got where it is by misbehaving, not by competing hard, that it sits astride an industry where no one can come in and compete as long as they exist. If you believe all of that, then you want this company broken up. But that's like saying, if there are witches, should we burn them?
Well, they may not
Jonathan Zittrain.
They may not be mutually exclusive things, of course. I mean, I think Microsoft clearly competes very hard. I say that even as a one-time summer intern at Microsoft, which I worked very hard, and the people around me did as well. But it doesn't stop them as well from engaging in certain so-called bad behaviors that the antitrust law can and ought to take notice of and do something about. So if you look at it from the layer of actual doctrine or what ought to happen here, I think Judge Jackson's decision, at least up to the remedy part, is pretty solid in my personal view. If you look at it from the political layer, certainly the Court of Appeals, when this first came up as a consent decree, was so upset with Judge Sporkin's view of the case, who was very much chary of Microsoft, that they not only reversed him, they returned the case to a different judge, which is a highly rare move, which was Judge Jackson. Then when Judge Jackson got the case as a violation of that very consent decree, again, as the dean points out, he was reversed quite strongly by the Court of Appeals. So as a political matter, you see a Court of Appeals very sympathetic to Microsoft.
I want to introduce Stephen Johnson, who edits FeedMag.com. He wrote the book Interface Culture, How New Technology Transforms the Way We Create and Communicate. Steve Johnson, there are a lot of questions here. I want to know, from your general view, has the software business discounted here the bad news for Microsoft? Is the world reshaping itself as if Microsoft were already broken up?
Well, I think that the most useful way to kind of approach that question is to follow the kind of division that was laid down yesterday, which is there are really two worlds here. There's the world of the applications group and the kind of productivity suite software, and then the world of operating systems. And I think the world of operating systems has been pretty competitive actually for the last couple of years. In a lot of ways, some of the descriptions of Microsoft's dominance in that field read more like the way things were in 94 or 95 before the web really took off. The place where there's very little competition right now, it seems to me, is when you look at, kind of basic applications like word processors. You really have, if you look, compare, I mean, Gates talks all the time about innovation and protecting, Microsoft's right to innovate and this, great number of products that they've generated and ideas that they've generated. But if you look out there in the larger landscape of the software market, the people who are, compare the people who are working on, basic ways to kind of manipulate text on your screen, i.e. Mm-hmm. what a word processor does, compared to, the number of people doing, pet e-commerce websites or devising new ways to do user polls on a website or something like that. There's way more innovation at these tiny little fields on the web, which is basically an open platform, and very little alternatives to Microsoft Word and this most fundamental thing that we do with our computer, which is manipulate text on the screen. So I think, you know, the best news here is that we may see some more activity because of the unbundling of the applications group from the operating systems.
Jonathan Zittrain.
I'm a little bit skeptical of the remedy. I suppose all of us have no idea what's on the other side of the abyss when you actually start slicing and dicing. It's true that Microsoft has at least overwhelming market share, whether or not contestable, in these applications like word processors. And as Stephen says, they're pretty fundamental things, you know, the manipulation of words on a screen. On the other hand, traditionally at least, these operating systems have been the thread that weaves it all together. And whoever controls the gate of that operating system is the entity that can control what applications will be successful and what won't.
Steve is saying that there's a lot of operating system competition and challenge to Microsoft even now, right? Is that your point, Steve?
Yeah, I mean, you have to look beyond. I mean, that's not so much, you know, it's nice to have Apple back in the picture finally, but, you know, I don't think there's real competition coming there. But, you know, you look at it as the web as a potential rival, as a platform that things are being built on. I mean, Yahoo is getting into the software business. People, you know, use their calendar applications through Yahoo now. And so, you know, 5 years from now, they well may be, you know, building a platform on top of the web for selling software there. There's the wireless domain. There's the Palm OS for Palm Top tablet-like devices. There's Java. There are a bunch of different alternatives out there in a way that there certainly weren't 4 or 5 years ago.
See, I think Steve is absolutely right about that. There are these whole new territories opened up to us of potential growth and innovation and all sorts of interesting little companies getting in and doing interesting things there. They're the ones that are going to put the internet into your refrigerator, and there isn't yet a dominant internet refrigerator OS maker. The question is going to be, is there some advantage that could be used by the dominant meat and potatoes personal computer operating system maker? And there it's Microsoft. You're sending your kid to college. She wants to get a computer to work. It's going to be a Windows machine at this point, even today. Is there some advantage that OS maker has to be able to leverage the monopoly there into other areas? And to me, the story of the browser wars is the story of, in addition to competing hard, using that operating system monopoly to leverage into what previously had been a free-for-all. An open area, who knows who will win.
Okay, if I could ask a question here to the two panelists.
Steve Johnson.
Which I think gets to the heart of this. I mean, one of the little side kind of issues here is that if this goes through as Jackson outlined it, Gates has to put his shares behind one of the two companies. He can't hold stock in both of them. So which company does he back effectively? Does he bet on the applications group or on the OS group?
There's a wonderful question. Who knows? Are you there, Bill Gates? what do you think, Jonathan?
That's my reading of the thing as well. Certainly the high-level officers can't hold shares in both of the companies, whichever is the parent and whichever is the child. If I'm Gates, I'm going to go with the OS. I'm going to go with that which has been tried and true. It looked like DOS was dead, but we were able to take DOS and reinvent it into Windows. Windows is on the ropes. Clearly, we're going to try to reinvent it into something else. I'll let the boring downstream applications go and try to hold on to my leverage, which is the OS.
What is the Ron Cass? I mean, what are the implications here for this industry's ability to kind of manage itself, to break itself up, to find new balances and competitions here?
Well, clearly the order that Judge Jackson entered yesterday will interfere with a lot of the natural change that might have happened. It's a highly regulatory order. When I first read the news accounts of it, I imagined that this was an order that pretty clearly said, we're going to break the company in two, there are a few limitations we're going to enter here, and go at it. That's not what the order looks like, and I think it will be, if it were to take effect in the form in which it was entered, it would be very difficult for the industry to cope with. All kinds of regulatory restrictions are packed in there right now.
It's clear that Judge Jackson doesn't trust Microsoft, and he basically feels at least once burned by them. Not just, hey, you know, companies are going to push the law to the maximum extent. That's what they're designed to do. But there was an instance in the prior case, the one in which Judge Jackson was ultimately reversed by the Court of Appeals, where he had given them an order that said, look, you've got to give OEMs, that's like Dell and Compaq, the option not to include Internet Explorer along with Windows when they sell their computers that have Windows on them to downstream customers like you and me. At least while you know, the thing is on appeal, that's what you've got to do. Microsoft responded to that order by telling people like Dell and Compaq, okay, since we have to answer the order, here are your choices. You can either do it the way you used to, which is put in Windows and IE together like you always have, or you can use version 1 of Windows 95 from several years ago, which won't work with any of the new software. So it's entirely up to you, and here we are listening to the judge's order. It's clear that Jackson was really, really stung by that and thought, I think rightfully, that Microsoft was being way too clever by half in responding to his order. So a lot of this regulatory stuff we see now, I think, can be directly traced. He used the word disingenuous in his memorandum and order yesterday. I think that's what he had in mind.
Could I ask you all, what is the chance that it was over for Bill Gates anyway, with the rise of the web and Palm Pilots and all these other things that you spoke about, Steve Johnson? What's the chance that the world had already kind of got Bill Gates in its sights?
Well, the irony, I think, about some of this is that precisely the kind of final straw here that triggered a lot of this, which is that, you know, the real integration of the browser into the operating system was exactly what we were saying somewhat kind of contemptuously, again, 4 or 5 years ago, that Microsoft wouldn't be able to do, that they were, you know, they didn't get the Internet and they were slow and the web was moving much faster than them. And they were just, you know, kind of this old dinosaur, the way IBM had become a dinosaur a decade or two before. And it, you know, it turned out they actually managed to move pretty quickly and figure out how to get it right. In fact, you know, Internet Explorer is the best browser out there, I would say, right now. I mean, I use it kind of in spite of myself.
Now, of course, it is ironic that what happened in this case is what happened in the IBM case. Just at the point when the industry is changing, when all these new forces are coming to bear, and the dominant player is facing a whole series of challenges, is when the Justice Department says, no, you're too dominant, we've got to break you up.
I want to go to calls. It's 1-800-423-8255 to join the conversation on Microsoft. 1-800-423-TALK. Bob is calling from a car phone.
Hi, folks. You know, I was wondering, you know, what the financial implications, you know, a little... for the breakup are, what would a shareholder of Microsoft own after a breakup, and you know, from a structural sort of corporate organizational standpoint, you know, it's not as if they're able to break up a company into having different territories and so forth. If you have two companies that are, you know, an OS company and an applications company, you know, they're obviously working, they're still designing, you know, software for a particular operating system. What are the real tangible differences are going to be, you know, between these two companies once they have different management teams and different ownership? I mean, aren't they really going to be doing the same thing?
Jonathan Zittrain.
My understanding from reading it is that if you're a shareholder of Microsoft right now and the divestiture actually takes place, according to a plan, by the way, that Microsoft is asked to come up with, they're supposed to create the formula for their own divestiture, something I'll be very intrigued to see if they ever do. You'll end up with two shares where before you had one or something like that, one in the new company and one in the old, and then you'd be free to sell one or the other. So that's how it would work for a run-of-the-mill shareholder. As to the resulting companies, I think you're right that the two companies would be differentiated at first by their starting points. One is holding the keys to Windows, the other to Office, the apps, and the Internet stuff. And from there, they're free in some sense, maybe not to work with each other, but to grow again. There's nothing to stop this new OS company from starting to make applications. There's nothing to stop this applications company from starting to design a new OS.
Hmm. Bob, interesting question. A good answer. 1-800-423-8255. Steve is calling from a car phone.
Hi, Chris.
Welcome, Steve.
And panelists. I'm an engineer, by the way, and I don't really completely understand the legal aspects of the antitrust situation. However, I wanted to ask if there isn't a major definitional problem in the issue about the browser being in the operating system, and whether Microsoft could poke a hole in this by simply saying that that the browser, I mean, as an engineer, I think of a browser as a program that displays files on my screen. They're hypertext files. Originally, there was no active content. And the function of displaying files on a computer is an operating system function, that just as the type command. I know it maybe that's a little bit of a stretch, or the more command in Unix. But basically, you need to be able to see data on the screen. Why can't that be an operating system function, and why can't you simply look at Netscape Communications as a company that built a business based on something that would inevitably become part of an operating system?
Is that your question, Steve Johnson?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a very good question, and it gets to something maybe even a little bit bigger than that, which is there are a lot of things that that Microsoft has done, or that the market has done in response to Microsoft's products, that I think contradict a little bit of Jackson's ruling in this, which is that we like integration, we like standards. The drive towards having a common kind of lingua franca that everybody uses, even if it's a proprietary one, is a very powerful thing. And a lot of what Microsoft achieved in getting to that, you know, kind of 90% market share that it has, both in the OS side and in the application side, is because people like to consolidate around one product, and they like to have their browser integrated into the operating system because it does make sense on a certain level. So, you know, the thorniest question here is imagine a kind of alternative Microsoft that managed to get to that same level of kind of dominance in the industry without breaking any laws, with just, you know, convincing the market that it should consolidate around these products. Do we still have a reason for breaking them up?
That is Steve Johnson of FeedMag.com. You're listening to The Connection.
This is WBUR and WRNI. Back to The Connection in just a few minutes from now. Good morning. I'm Jill Kaufman, a Connection producer. I'm joined in the studio by Jake Clayton and Sam Fleming. We're taking just a couple of minutes of time from The Connection this morning to ask you to show your support for WBUR and WRNI. The number to call is 800-909-9287. Why are you calling? You're calling for a few reasons. One, it's the end of the year fiscal fundraiser. Two, you're calling for The Connection. You're calling for Morning Edition. You're calling for all the news and information you hear here on WBUR. WBUR and WRNI.
And you're calling because this is the only kind of program in the whole country that does this kind of journalism day in and day out, talking to unusual figures, taking unusual looks and approaches to issues like the Microsoft ruling, where it's, every day you come away having been entertained and also informed and enlightened about a subject that you probably now know more than you did before you started listening. That's what The Connection brings every day.
You're glued to your radio this hour, to The Connection, trying to know as much as you can about what Microsoft might look like if it were two companies, or more importantly, what it will mean for you no matter what happens. Then make a pledge, because that information is paid for by pledges from listeners just like you. So go to the phone if you haven't yet today during this one-day fundraiser and pledge for The Connection at 1-800-909-9287. Or pledge on the web at WBUR.org or WRNI.org.
Get connected right now in two ways. Stay tuned to your radio. Keep listening to this Microsoft Connection. Call us right now at 800-909-9287. You are connected every day to topics of note, to music, to poetry, to news, to information. Did you listen the day that King Sunny Ade came in with his entire band? Were you here the day?
I love
that. That was such a great hour. Were you here the day that Randy Commissar was on? That was back in May, and he's sort of this guru of the web developers, talking about the new, you know, the new internet, the new web scene out in Silicon Valley, and also Route 128. Are you on Route 128? Are you listening to this Microsoft Connection right now? Call us. It's a fiscal year-end fundraiser, 800-909-9287.
And think about the quantity that The Connection provides week after week, 10 shows a week, hundreds of shows a year, all interesting, all thoroughly researched. Chris Lydon is just so good at getting behind the story, getting underneath the story. You can only get that on The Connection.
And only with your pledges. So make one today, because it's the only day that we're fundraising. All the summer long will be uninterrupted by fundraising. So go to the phone today. Do it right now at 1-800-909-9287. Put the pledge on a credit card if you can, because it is the end of the fiscal year. And I'll tell you what, if you pledge $75 right now, we'll give you your choice as our thanks of a WBUR cooler for the beach or a WRNI t-shirt for the beach. Either will serve you well, as will the news on WBUR and WRNI. So pay for it now with your pledge at 1-800-909-9287 or on the web, WBUR.org, WRNI.org.
The number to call, 800-909-9287. Again, back to The Connection in just a few minutes from now. One of the things that makes our day as producers and Chris as a host so incredible is the lack of predictability in the world. So we know this Microsoft ruling is coming down yesterday, and we start working on the show and we start making calls. I think, honestly, Sam and Jay, we made 20 calls to folks that are in the industry, to antitrust law folks, to investor types. Folks will know what this means on Wall Street. And even this morning, we're still making calls because we didn't quite understand what it was about until we did some processing. And you're processing as you're listening to this important conversation. Are you a Microsoft user? Do you own stock? Are you thinking about the economy overall? This is a major company. How does Microsoft affect you? Importantly, how does The Connection affect you every day? Every day we say 800-909-9287.
And what are the legal ramifications of this ruling? There are all sorts of issues that are vetted and then brought to you, and the one major question, and then we start peeling away layers so that we have a great depth to the conversation. This is the kind of interactive radio that you can only get on WBUR and WRNI.
1-800-909-9287 is the number. In fact, the only way we can bring it to you is with your pledge today, during the only day that we're asking for your money to pay for the news, uninterrupted news after today. So call now, 1-800-909-9287. Pledge $75, have a WBUR cooler or a WRNI t-shirt as our thanks.
Call now, because where else but The Connection will you get conversations about Karl Marx, about American psychiatry, about friendly home environments, environmentally friendly home environments. Call now, 800-909-9287, 909-9287. It's 33 minutes past 10.
I'm Christopher Lydon. This is the Microsoft Connection, 1-800-423-8255. We're imagining a world with two Microsofts or half Microsofts in it, according to Judge Jackson's decision. Philip Greenspun joins us. His company is Ars Digita. He teaches at MIT, and he teaches his own web boot camps for all comers. Phil Greenspun, I'm particularly interested in what's been happening out there in the world with Microsoft distracted, its eye off the ball for 2.5 years. What is happening in the rest of software world, web world, that you see?
Well, Microsoft, I think, has been distracted even more than by the lawsuit, by the fact that they have a campus. You know, they're in a very isolated location talking to each other. Companies that do that don't get the benefits of companies in Silicon Valley or in cities where their employees, you know, walk out on the street, talk to people from other firms, and, you know, get new ideas. So I think that the reason why Microsoft has had so little impact on the internet is that they, their people aren't connected to anyone outside the company, to anybody innovating. So that's kind of gotten them stuck in the desktop world. So I think the big trend that has been going on while they've been fighting the Justice Department and working on Windows 2000 and Office 2000, is that if you look at a graph starting in the 1970s with Xerox, they invented the desktop app, and then the hardware engineers in the 80s made computers so cheap that everybody had a desktop app. You know, by 1995, people were lining up at midnight to buy a new operating system, to buy Windows 95. But already people are starting to shift to web-based applications. So, you know, people would use Yahoo Calendar instead of a desktop program to manage their calendar, or Hotmail. I mean, that's the one area where Microsoft is actually a big factor, because they acquired this company, Hotmail. So the shift to web-based applications already happened, actually, probably by 97 when the case started. But I think that now the really interesting trend is if you look at most websites, you're interested in about three or four lines of information, and they give you a banner ad on top, navigation on top, navigation down the side, little teasers on the right-hand side of the page.
Right.
Somewhere buried in there is the information you want, and they say, hey, you know, you probably have a 21-inch monitor, 100-key keyboard, and a huge mousing service, and you can navigate to the stuff you care about. If you're browsing from a cell phone with a three-line display, there's a real technology and programming challenge of delivering people the right three lines. So I think that that's something where Microsoft hasn't done any work on what people need for enterprise applications. So that's been kind of a shame because they do have a lot of good programmers. And I also think the breakup is kind of a shame, frankly, because it won't give people what they want. I think in 1995 it would have been interesting to have a standalone operating system company. At this point, people don't care what operating system their cell phone is running. They're not going to line up at midnight to buy a new one, and they're going to want systems that upgrade themselves. The real interesting thing about Microsoft is probably Office, and as long as that's one company, nobody will ever be able to build a competitive spreadsheet, because the spreadsheet, the word processor, the browser, all this, the database like Microsoft Access, they all talk to each other by kind of private interfaces. They don't really document all the interfaces. So I think if Microsoft were broken up into six companies, you'd see some real competition.
This is fascinating, but I can't digest it that as fast as you can say it. What does this changing, this sort of moving focus to the point where now, you know, the interest is in the three-line display, what is that, and sort of well past the Microsoft era of, of Windows world, what does that tell you about the necessity or the burden, the impact, the importance of this decision? I mean, if you just had, you know, 10 minutes with Judge Jackson's ear or the Supreme Court's ear, what would you be telling them about the meaning of this breakup?
What I just said, although maybe I should have said it slower, I would have said that basically what the world needs is it's applications that users sit at. They don't really care about the operating system plumbing underneath.
Right.
And you need a way for, you need an environment in which new applications can flower. Now, the fact that Microsoft does have a desktop monopoly isn't as bad as it once was, because the applications that people are demanding are web-based applications. So there's a couple things. I guess one is, you know, the phone company was prevented from using its monopoly profits in telephone service from buying all the small innovative companies that were using the transistor. They invented the transistor, but they couldn't actually, you know, they couldn't own every radio company. They don't, AT&T never owned Sony. And Microsoft, by being, you know, it's been an unregulated monopoly, and it's been able to use its profits to buy a lot of the innovators, which has been destructive, I think. You know, buying things like Hotmail and Web TV, it's probably made it harder for other, the acquisition by Microsoft of Web TV has probably made it harder for other little appliance companies to get off the ground. So there's two things. They probably shouldn't be able to buy some of these innovative web-based companies in order to preserve competition there, which is where the real action is. And that if they were broken up into a separate word processor and spreadsheet company, say, then those programs would have to communicate by a publicly advertised interface. And that would open up the possibility for all kinds of clever people to read the interface and say, hey, I can actually slot my little program in here and have it tie closer to the spreadsheet or closer to the word processor.
But if a Supreme Court judge said, Phil Greenspan, help me out here, has the world moved past the Microsoft emergency? Can we sort of relax about this case? What would you say?
I would say that we could relax about this case if we would take a leaf from Mahatma Gandhi's book, that, you know, Mahatma Gandhi would not have sat at Microsoft Word writing a legal brief to the government about how bad Microsoft was. You know, he believed in Swaraj and self-reliance. So basically,
I must say, this is a legal doctrine with which I'm somewhat unfamiliar.
Well, the government 3 years ago should have said, we're going to make a commitment to the problem with Linux is the poverty of the commons, the tragedy of the commons. Basically, you know, our little company, we only have 120 programmers, so it isn't worth our while to invest heavily in making Linux better than Windows, say, or improving Linux, because we only have 120 programmers who can benefit from that change, and another, you know, 30 or 5 odd admin and management people. Whereas the government, they have millions of employees. So basically, if the government had said, you know, we don't want to pay a tax to Microsoft anymore each time we hire somebody, so we're going to invest enough money in Linux and open source applications so that we can run the government on all this free software and not suffer in any way, that would have then created enough of a community of this stuff to let all the smaller industrial firms use that. So I think the most interesting thing the government could have done with Microsoft is not to sue them, but to break free of them themselves. So that is Mahatma Gandhi's concept of Swaraj. That's complaining about the, you know, British tax on salt. Go to the sea and make your own salt.
Don't go away, Phil Greenspan. We're talking about the Microsoft case and Judge Jackson's decision. The phone's 1-800-423-8255. The Harvard internet guru Jonathan Zittrain is with us in the studio. Arana is on the line.
Welcome. A little nervous going to be on the phone, but the comment that someone made earlier about the browser not being that much of a big deal and it's just part of the operating system, I kind of wanted to bring in what Microsoft is doing to try to corner the market on the web and control the web. They are in the process with their next release of Internet Explorer of distorting the World Wide Web Consortium standard so that it appears to not work while their proprietary technology does work. And as far as the standard is around using dynamic content, which is the hot new thing on the web. And they've gone and implemented 80% of the standard in Internet Explorer 5.5 so that when you use it, it doesn't really work right. So, but if you use ActiveX, which is theirs, it works just great. Hmm. But it's proprietary, and they own it. And they get to decide how it's going to be developed and, therefore, how the web gets developed.
Is this kind of complaint about Microsoft fair? Is it on the money, Jonathan Zittrain?
I think it's a pretty tried and true strategy, and I would guess...
Which, Microsoft or...
Of Microsoft.
Or the complaint.
No, okay. Of Microsoft's. And I think Bill Gates might answer it by saying, yep, it's a free country, and, you know, we call it embrace and extend. We take a standard that had been out there for anybody to use and take, and we improve it, and sure enough, in improving it, we make it incompatible with certain other things that use that open standard. But hey, take it or leave it. And when you're having the market share that Microsoft has, to say take it or leave it to the community may mean the community grits its teeth and together has to take it rather than leave it. So I agree that this is a strategy for which I don't know how much the current remedy does what it's supposed to do. So it's something to keep an eye out for. The other issue maybe worth raising is I found in what Phil had said earlier, it connects up with a whole bunch of new baronies that might be something that Microsoft or a Microsoft-like company could take advantage of. For instance, Phil mentioned phones. And you look at those four lines on your Nokia phone. Right now, as I understand it, there's one company that basically does the phone browser. So that could potentially be, if that becomes a new gateway to the Internet and to commerce, that one company could be in a position to impose its little tax. Time Warner or other cable companies, which are giving high-speed internet access to the home, are in a position perhaps to favor some content, perhaps Time Warner content, over others. It's obviously, you know, it's all speculative, but this does seem to have two phases. The first is too early to tell. The second is too late to do anything about it. And acting when it's too early to tell always has its dangers. Of course, it's hard to act when it's too late to do anything about it.
Phil Greenspan, are you there?
I am here.
Did you want to comment on Arana's point?
Well, you know, I think the phone market, fewer than 1% of the people who are going to be browsing the Internet via phone are doing so. So, you know, I don't want to get depressed in advance about the
it's too early to tell, right?
The coming monopoly in the phone world. I'm interested. People have been talking since the late 60s, since the network was new, about all your home appliances being hooked up to the net. And the I'm interested in seeing what happens when companies start putting in network interfaces on, say, sofas for customer support. If I order a sofa from furniture.com and it arrives at my house and I call them up and say I want to return it because, you know, the springs are too saggy, I want them to be able to say, hey, Mr. Greenspan, we telnetted to your sofa and the load sensors tell us that, you know, you weigh 300 pounds and you need the lard-ass spring options, which we're going to FedEx to you. It's a field upgradable install, so you don't have to send your sofa back. You know, I think that when all these things are networked, that you'll have an explosion of creativity that we haven't seen right now, where we still have the computers basically, they've come out of the glass rooms onto people's desks, but they're still not pervasive in people's lives. I actually have to go. Believe it or not, I have Yo-Yo Ma here, so I don't want to keep him waiting.
We don't want to do it either. We want to enlist in your boot camp, though, Phil Greenspan, and we'd like you to send us instructions, send us the route to get to the Ars Digita boot camp. Phil Greenspan, thank you for joining us. You're listening to The Connection. Funding for The Connection comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and from the Allaire Corporation, empowering people with innovative internet technology and offering dynamic career opportunities at Allaire.com.
This is 90.9 WBUR and WRNI in Rhode Island. I'm Jill Kaufman, a Connection producer, and let me tell you what it took to get Philip Greenspan on the program this morning. I think I started calling him around 9, found him at home, then he gave me his cell phone number plus his office number because he might be in a few different places, and he told me he had a meeting with Yo-Yo Ma. So I told him Yo-Yo Ma really likes us at The Connection, and he will give you permission to take time out and call The Connection, be a part of that conversation. We need you, Philip Greenspan. We need you, Connection listeners, to call right now and show your support for this show that you're listening to, that you tune into all the time. This is our fiscal year-end fundraiser. Give us a call, 800-909-9287.
Call because this show is so important to you. It's such a big part of your life. It's such a big reason why you listen to WBUR and WRNI, because there's no other show like it in the whole country, and especially no other show like it in New England. This is your program. We really need to hear from you right now.
You know, you walk down the street, you really get the sense that everybody in Boston listens to The Connection, in Providence now as well. And I guess it really is true that everybody, or at least nearly everybody, does. But listening is one thing. Supporting it is what keeps it on the air. So go to the phone right now during this one day of fundraising left for the fiscal year, one day of fundraising left for the summer, and make your pledge as generous as you can for The Connection at 1-800-909-9287. Be it $50, $100, $500, whatever you can afford is what we need to hear from you with your phone call right now at 1-800-909-9287, or your pledge on the web at WBUR.org or WRNI.org.
The Connection is your local neighborhood. The Connection is your local bar. The Connection is your local moment every day. Local, national, international news that's breaking, news that's interesting, topics that are interesting, interesting people. You as well join us every day on The Connection. Your calls mean so much to the conversation. You create the tone of what we do all the time. You also create these radio stations, WBUR and WRNI, with your support. Call us right now, 800-909-9287. Tell them you're calling for The Connection. Just go to your phone and call right now.
You have a seat at the table every day, but you also need to help pay the freight, because we have to set the table every day with the best conversation, the best subjects, the best journalism, the best conversation that's happening in this city, that's happening in the New England, and really the best call-in program of its kind in the country. It's your program. We need to hear from you right now. The number is 1-800-909-9287. And pledge with a credit card so that we can count your money in this fiscal year for The Connection shows that you've listened to over the past year, the ones you'll listen to next year,
1-800-909-9287 is the number to call. Here's a way to help out. Pledge $75 right now. We'll thank you with a WBUR cooler or a WRNI t-shirt, your choice, and that $75 will pay for the connection. That's why we need you to call right now. The number again, 1-800-909-9287. On the web at WBUR.org or WRNI.org. Make your pledge online or on the phone, but do it now.
You know who you really have to call for? You have to call for me, because Mary McGrath, our stalwart senior producer, who you've heard about time and time again, said that if I don't get you to call the way Chris Lydon gets you to call, I may not have a job later on. Of course, she needs me as a producer, so I'll be back there. But you do need the call right now, because we need you at The Connection. We need you daily. We need you at WBUR and WRNI to keep bringing you programs like the Microsoft story that we've been talking about this morning. Breaking news for you this morning here on The Connection Uninterrupted, 800-909-9287.
We know these various things like newspapers and stuff are important to you. The Connection, we hear people are passionate about The Connection. They listen to it as much as possible. They come away from it every day with something they hadn't heard or learned before. This is your program. It's a great time for you to call to support this radio station.
You know, we want to raise another $1,000 before the end of the hour. That's just a couple of minutes away, and your $50 or $100 pledge will get us there if you get on the phone right now. 1-800-909-9287. And think about this for a second. If your last pledge for The Connection was a year ago, it's time to renew your support. We've brought you 52 weeks of programs, nearly every single one of them uninterrupted by fundraising. Pledge for that now. Pledge for the information you got today. Pledge for the information you're going to get tomorrow from The Connection or in the next hour. 1-800-909-9287. Do it now.
You live here. You live in this real Connection land, in the virtual Connection land that we have on the web. You live among us. You make our programs come alive. We need you to call us right now at 800-909-9287. Call us the way William Tarleton did, who lives on the Cape, and he is grateful for The Connection. Thanks also to Horace McDonald, Sarah Marcotte, Stephanie Daniels, and Francis Katz. All these folks called this morning. Hundreds of people have called. We need you to call right now. 800-909-9287.
And Nora Bouchard from Shrewsbury and Teresa Hadley from Plymouth and Robert Flint from Cambridge, all big fans of The Connection. We need to hear from you. This is a program that looks at what's happening now in a world that's changing all the time. The Connection is on top of it. The Connection is always looking at the third dimension, the ideas behind whatever it is that we're talking about. And even in history and in music, bringing it to current life. This is your program. Give us a call right now.
Couldn't do it without you, in fact, because your pledges really do pay the freight for The Connection. So go to the phone now, make a pledge. It's the only day of fundraising for the rest of the summer and the rest of the fiscal year. So call 1-800-909-9287 or pledge on the web at WBUR.org or WRNI.org. Either way, do it now, because it's the last day of fundraising for the summer and for the fiscal year. We need to hear from you.
Summertime uninterrupted by fundraising. I like that. That gives me more time to listen to The Connection and more time to listen to all the programs of WBUR and WRNI. Did you listen the day when we talked about Billie Holiday's version of Strange Fruit? Did you listen the day that we talked about Whitey Bulger? How about when we talked about the tango and the music and the dance and the culture of tango? What about when we had the fiction writer George Saunders on, and with him we talked about the American workplace and the language of the office and the language of industry? Really, really great writer. Really interesting guy. And we didn't just go ahead and do a fiction writer and his book. We came up with something you could get involved with. You can get involved right now. You can do it all the time with us at WBUR and WRNI. Right now, all you have to do is call and show your support. 800-909-9287. Tell them Sam Fleming sent you. Tell them Jay Clayton sent you. We're here asking you to support us in this one-day fundraiser, this final what, of the fiscal year fundraiser.
A program you can't get anywhere else. It's completely unique. The Connection. We hear from producers around the country. How do you do this every day? How do you get that kind of conversation going? How do you get this kind of program? Only on WBUR and WRNI do you get this.
And only with pledges from enough listeners to keep the program coming. So join the people who have already called now at 1-800-909-9287.
800-909-9287. That's the number to call right now. Show your support for The Connection and for all the day's news. news ahead. Show your support for the next hour of The Connection completely uninterrupted by fundraising. Call us right now. Call for Christopher Lydon. Call for us producers who work hard to keep this show on the air with Chris. 800-909-9287. Remember, it's the last day of the fiscal year fundraiser for us. It's 57 minutes past 10 o'clock. We are funded by you, our contributing listeners, when you call 800-909-9287, and also by Adero, a provider of global content distribution services designed for e-business. Adero, www.adero.com. Coco Badokian and Sons, committed to educating consumers by offering advice on fine oriental rugs from around the world. Appraisals, restoration, and cleaning in Winchester and on the web, cocorugs.com. Bicon Dental Implants, providing alternatives for patients considering root canal treatments, available at the Implant Center at Faulkner Hospital, 617-524-3900. And the Institute of Contemporary Art, showing new film and video from Africa, Asia, and Europe. Now, through July 2nd, the ICA at 266-5152. Just a couple of minutes to go before we get back to The Connection uninterrupted. We're having our final of the fiscal year. Fundraising not to be seen, not to be heard around this place during the summer, but we need you to go to your phone right now, 800-909-9287.
Show your support because you have passion for this program, you have passion for WBUR, you have passion for WRNI, and you have passion for what public radio journalism is all about, The Connection perhaps taking it to new levels in terms of what listeners can do to help participate with the ideas. That's you. That's your program. Give us a call right now.
And if you'd like, as our thanks for your pledge, we'll send you either the WBUR cooler for the summer or the WRNI t-shirt. Our way of thanks.